Hi, this is Danielle from the Gels Curator, and this is episode 43 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Saatchi had a really cool giveaway this month, and they do. They have given me two VIP tickets to the Affordable Art Fair in New York next week. If you're going to be in New York and you want a chance to win these bad boys, pop over to my site, thejealouscurator.com, and leave a comment on the Charlotte Evans post from this past Wednesday. You'll just have to scroll down a couple of posts to get to it. I will be drawing a winner at noon on Saturday, March 26th. That is today. So get over there quick to enter. All right, so on to today's episode. Speaking of New York, I'm talking to New York native Andrea D'Aquino. She is an illustrator and collage artist, and if her name sounds familiar, it might be because I wrote about her not too long ago when Quarto Press released a new version of Alice in Wonderland that Andrea illustrated. It is gorgeous. Anyway, I've met Andrea before, and we've done a few projects together, but we've never really talked, so I cannot wait to find out all of her stories and how she does what she does. Ready? Let's call New York. Hi, Andrea.
Hi there, Danielle. It's great to talk with you.
I know, you too. This is so cool. We've met once quickly in New York a few years ago, and we've done lots of things online, but this is the first real big conversation.
That's right. I think it was just a brief meeting in New York. You were promoting your very, I think it was your very first book.
Yeah, Creative Block had just come out. And you're in collage, but it wasn't out yet.
Okay. That's right. But I guess that was when I met you when the second for the Creative Block, right?
Yeah. It was so nice to finally meet you in person. And then when I was preparing for this, I was like, because you know you were in collage and we've gone back and forth on all sorts of things. And I thought, I don't know the answers to any of these questions. So this is going to be super fun. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay. So I always,
why did you ask?
Oh, I'm glad you said yes. So I always like to kind of start at the beginning and find out, you know, if you were that creative kid and sort of about how you grew up. Did you go to art school? Was it always something that you thought you'd do, or is this something that kind of came on later in life? So go.
Right. Okay. I would say I probably was the creative kid. I think even some of my earliest memories are kind of watching TV and being very excited by colors, and whether it was Gumby and Saturday morning animations. And I just was always very excited by colors. But I would say maybe when I was about between 10 and 12, I started drawing. And I noticed it seemed to come to me fairly naturally. And, you know, everyone would go, that looks pretty good. And I guess even I thought, well, yeah, this isn't that hard for me. And everyone seems to think it's great. And
were you those kids that the other kids would be like, can you draw a horse for me? Did you ever get that?
Yes. A lot of times at the time, even though it wasn't going that far back, but my friends and I were crazy about the Beatles, and I would draw, you know, it has nothing to do with my work now, but, you know, very realistic, or so it seemed at the time, pictures of all the Beatles from photographs, and they would hang them on their bedroom walls and stuff like that. So then by the time I got to high school age, it was kind of no question that I would go to art school. And I studied graphic design. It was my major. I guess I always have a sort of practical streak in me thinking that, well, you know, I like to draw, but I'm not Michelangelo here. I mean, my background is still pretty, you know, working class parents. And so I'll be creative. And they did always encourage me, but I went the more practical route and majored in graphic design. And I will say at that time, which, you know, I'll date myself, I say it was the mid-80s, it wasn't as, I almost want to say, trendy as it is now. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like everyone and their brother or sister knows about fonts or,
yeah.
You know, not that they really know about it, but it's kind of trendier. So somewhere along the way that happened.
And did you work as a graphic designer for a long time?
Well, I sort of tried, but, you know, also at that time, things were put together with mechanicals, with, you know, rubber cement and X-Acto blades.
Yeah.
And, the fact is my strength was never precision or being careful. So it just never came particularly naturally to me. And, but I did realize that I had more facility with ideas and, concepts and just, sort of bubbling up with a lot of, ideas really, and a lot of energy for it. So I stumbled around a lot and I realized I'm not really officially a graphic designer in the traditional sense. Let's see. I went to a lot of ad agencies and worked in the studio as my first job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just cut it short. I failed miserably. I was just not good at it. I cut my own finger and started bleeding. And, you know, and I had like a sense of being nervous about it too, which is never really a good sign.
Right.
And somewhere
especially when you're holding an X-Acto blade.
That's right. Somewhere along the way, someone gave me a chance to, you know, they had come up with some ads for, I think it was slippers for Mother's Day or something. It was like a real assignment to not put it together, but to work with a writer and come up with all the concepts and ideas. And somehow that came really naturally and easy to me. I had fun and had lots of ideas, and I was just lucky to someone to open that door to me, and it was natural that that was where I belonged. So I became an art director in that advertising agency.
Thank goodness for Mother's Day slippers.
That's right.
Wow. And then how long did you do that?
Well, many, many, many years. Like I said, I guess I started in the early 90s, and up until about the early 2000s, I did it really a lot. You know, it's an industry with very little boundaries and working weekends and nights. Mm-hmm. And I did love it a lot, but I slowed down and became freelance in the early 2000s. And I will say, I mean, part of what I'll say to you and your listeners now is that I do still take freelance assignments as an art director in advertising. And that's because just out of practicality, I will be, you know, very sincere and say I don't make my full living making kind of crazy pictures of Alice in Wonderland or something, even though I do make money out of it and I have some great success. I think part of what I like to say to people is it's not a kind of always lollipops and unicorns dream of the practical way of things working. So I do still work freelance as an advertising art director,
mm-hmm.
Even now, though much less kind of less headbanging way than I did years ago.
Yeah. And it is, I worked in advertising for years and years too. Yeah. And I'm still a graphic designer right now. And
mm-hmm.
You're right. Like it's easy to pop in, mm-hmm. do a job,
yeah,
get a chunk of money, pop mm-hmm. back out.
That's right.
You know, and it pays the bills and like, you know, and especially if it comes easily to you and, you know, it's fun to pop in every now and then, like, of course.
Yes.
And I'm exactly the same as you. Very practical.
Uh-huh.
Very responsible.
Yeah, you know, that's somewhat my nature, I guess. But I feel like it does give me a little sense of security in a way then to be a little more daring and free with the creative work, because I'm not putting all of my financial prospects on that. Not that you don't have to take some risks and take it seriously, but it can be scary and you can take away some of the pressure on it to make that overly commercial.
Mm-hmm, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well,
did you start, so in the early 2000s, did you start doing illustration for people?
You know what? No, I really was so, the nature of that advertising in that world is so kind of all encompassing of your life and thoughts that I really didn't have much time to do it, but I would dabble it on the weekends. So,
and was it collage? Has it always been sort of collage for you?
You know what? No. I really like paint and color in a way is sort of my driving passion or force, I would say. And I think eventually the collage sort of came about as a natural outgrowth of being a graphic designer, especially having started a little before computers were so prominent. You did use your hands and cut up and move around elements as a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt natural to me. But no, I do like the tactile aspect of paint and drawing still. But I would say I've done that professionally. It might just be 5 years at most or so. And it was a gradual start.
Wow. I thought you'd been doing it forever.
No. As an illustrator, I'm really kind of a beginner. Is really the truth. And it took me a while to figure out what my personality and persona, and I hesitated the word style sometimes, but what that is took a while because, you know, as a graphic designer in advertising, your job is a little bit to put yourself into other people's heads and interpret what's best to express there. Brand or persona, and I think it took me a few years in a way to clear my head and say, well, what is it that I personally would like to express? It didn't come right away.
That kind of gives me chills. That's so, I've never thought of it like that. And I've been doing, I started in advertising in the early 2000s as you were finishing, and worked for brands for years and years and years and years. And even now I still do that. And I create logos for other people. And it's so funny because, I have really struggled with what's my artistic style or brand or, you know, whatever. And it's never occurred to me that it's because I'm so good at being a chameleon for other people.
Yes.
That, wow, that's kind of an aha moment.
I think, you know, there maybe are a tiny handful of graphic designers that have very big names that are more in the category of you want what, you know, Stefan Sagmeister.
Yeah, you go to him to get hit,
Or, you know, someone in that. But that's, I think, a real minority. And most graphic designers, it's more a profession where your job is to express what's right for the client. And I would say it was not immediate for me to just switch gears and say, well, what do I want to do? I actually did take some very slow years of taking less work, period, and did some traveling and just really slowed down. And I took, you know, some financial hit because of it, but it just felt like it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I can say I put my money where my mouth is. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like it's still evolving to some degree. I really do. But
how did you find, like, because you do now really have a style, like, I can tell when it's your work. And so is that just a matter of, like, making, playing, experimenting, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that very, very sincerely that it is something recognizable, because sometimes I still struggle. You have a little blinders with your own work, I feel. So I do see it, but I think it is harder for me to see sometimes than other people. So I would say, I guess two things are the main things I like to tell other people that ask me questions. And one is, yes, a lot of just the idea of play and being spontaneous and enjoying yourself is very key to what I do. So you're not in that mood 24/7, but you do have to, you know, discipline yourself to give yourself the time to do it. But that is kind of enjoying the act of playing around and seeing what happens, even by chance, is something I like to do. Mm-hmm. And just to go back a little to what I was saying before, I just really want to reiterate to people to not feel bad about having other jobs, even if they might be, you know, a shoe salesman. I don't know what it might be, but I hope people don't feel discouraged that, well, I'm not making, you know, six figures a year on being an artiste, so somehow everyone else is doing great and I should give up.
Yeah, that's a very important message.
I think so. I've had very, very, very successful artist people tell me that they've always worked doing really all kinds of things that you might not necessarily expect, and it's not a failure or it's not any reflection that you're not a real artist. It's just kind of survival, and it can help you grow as a person and be more well-rounded. And
yeah,
I don't know, not everyone just bursts out of the box being a household name.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And also, you know, I think sometimes that helps you appreciate your time that you do get in the studio.
Yes. You know? Yes. That's right. That's right.
Go ahead.
I just said it does take some discipline. There are times I do find that creativity goes in waves, a little ebbs and flows, but you do have to have some discipline and sometimes force yourself a little, not when you really don't feel like it, but, you know, a lot of it just is working and putting in the time. So
mm-hmm. I always say with people, I don't know if you do this, let me know. If I have set aside a chunk of time where I'm going to have studio time, you know, and I've decided that this is it, but I'm not really in the mood, yeah, I will still just go into my studio and just cut stuff out.
Yes.
And just listen to music or podcasts or whatever and drink coffee and cut things out. And before you know it, it's like ideas start flowing.
That's right. I find the exact same thing. And you know what? Some days it doesn't flow so well.
Yeah.
And I admit I can get a little discouraged, and you have all kinds of voices in your head that say, you know, what's the point of this and what. But I do think the thing maybe that separates the person that's quote unquote successful is they somehow manage to plow through those voices, because I imagine everyone has them, and almost irrationally ignore them, because sometimes they're right. What I did that day really is not very good.
Yeah.
It absolutely happens. And a lot.
One of the things I really liked in Creative Block actually was, you know, I asked everybody about inner critics and, like, you know, like you said, like these successful people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know if they had that voice and stuff. And everybody said yes. But some of the people, I really loved this, said that they've gotten to a point over all the years where they actually trust that voice. And so they said that if the voice is like, that sucks, mm-hmm, they're not, you know, it doesn't make them quit. It doesn't hurt their feelings. They're like, yeah, right. You're right, little buddy. That does kind of suck. And not every day in the studio is going to produce a masterpiece. But the important thing is getting in there every day so that you're living a creative life, right? And so I think it's interesting if you can get to a point where that voice doesn't shut you down. Like you said, you can plow through it, but it can guide you a little bit. And maybe if, you know, this one thing isn't working, maybe it's got a point and maybe you should go over to the right and try something else over there, you know?
That's right. Absolutely. You know, there can be maybe some people that are so unedited and fall so in love with everything that you realize, well, you know, maybe you could.
Yeah, maybe you could edit.
Throw something in the trash. Not a bad thing. Actually, sometimes that's a little tendency that I myself and people I have, you tend to hold on to everything like, oh, you know, I put so much time and effort to it. It's somehow valuable. And before you know it, you've got tons of stuff that maybe you should be honest and say, this is not that great.
Yeah, but then as a collage artist, you just cut that up and make new collages with it.
Okay, precisely.
You've got new source material.
That's exactly right, and that's often my advice is to cut it up, and it's sort of gratifying to cut it up, and there's some fun in being destructive, and you might make something much, much better.
Yeah.
So that's exactly right.
It's kind of terrifying and freeing at the same time.
That's right. I think it's healthy. But see, there you go. I didn't even say it. And you have the same instincts.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I don't know. I was talking to, I forget which collage artist, Holly Chastain maybe. And I was saying so many collage artists either used to be graphic designers or still are graphic designers. And I was thinking, I really want to put a show together that is collage artists that have that past.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think we all lean towards it, right? Because of like negative space and composition and it's very color choices. It's very similar to graphic design.
Sure. You know.
Oh, I want to ask you a question actually.
Yeah.
A little tangent on that. So do you use X-Acto blades given your past?
I do. Right. Even though they're not treacherous.
And you have 911 on pre-dial just in case.
That's hilarious. I do use X-Acto blades and sometimes a scissor. I probably feel a little safer with the scissor.
I never use X-Acto blades unless I have to do some weird little corner and the whole time I just keep thinking that I'm going to lose my fingertip. I'm so bad with them.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I don't feel quite as bad myself.
Well, see, because I didn't start design. I went to design school in 96 and that was just when they were teaching people on the computer. So I missed that whole X-Acto blade. Thank God I still have all my fingers. And that's why I just was so curious when you said that I was like, oh, I wonder, because some people will never use scissors. They're just X-Acto pros.
Right.
I can't do it though.
Well, I must say, and I do really admire and love a lot of work that is very precise, and you know, some people do collage in a very painstaking, neat way that their work sort of relies on that kind of precision, but you know, I don't do that well, and I definitely also believe in playing to your strengths and your weaknesses as well, so I don't even pretend to try to be precise because it really would not be very good. But you know, if some people do that really well, then that's what you gotta do.
You do a lot of ripping, don't you?
Yeah. I guess pretty much everything, and sometimes it's impatience, and sometimes I wish I did something a little neater. And
I love your style, is just so beautiful. So I want to actually know where do you find all your bits and pieces? And this is a two-part question. Where do you find all those bits and pieces? And are you super organized with them, or are they an explosion of things all over your studio?
Right. Huh. Well, I would say, as far as the organization, it's somewhere in between where I'm not crazy organized, but I do have a relatively reasonable system. But it's kind of big oblong photo box. I think they're intended for photos. And in like the Container Store or things like that. But I'm not obsessive about it.
You organize them by color?
They're organized by color, but there's plenty that is not, I'm not like a librarian or anything, because I feel that a lot of serendipity comes by finding things by chance. So it's not obsessively organized. It seems like that would be nice, but I also say I live and work in an apartment that's not teeny tiny space, but it is limited, so that also forces me to be more selective, that I can't save everything under the sun,
right?
And I think that maybe is a good thing, because you can be overwhelmed by choice sometimes. So I'm not sure there's a rhyme or reason to what I keep.
Yeah, it's just right, that instinct.
Yeah, but it is somewhat limited, and I'll say it's only mildly organized in a way that makes sense to me. And I'll just say, as far as what I keep, I'm attracted to, you know, beautiful things, but I try to use things that are not too perfect, or you know, ready-made patterned papers, or you know, things that you could just buy in an art store. That are too beautiful and someone else made it, right, in a way. So unless I have found things literally garbage in the streets, like some old wallpaper that was ripped out of an apartment that's, you know, been in there for 50 years or something. Or
see, that's what I wanted to know, because there's so many, like, your work looks like little treasure boxes. Like, there's such weird things in there. And I'm like, where did she find that thing? And where did she find that thing?
Oh,
and
that's interesting.
So do you find things as you're walking along and just take them home?
Yes, I'm much more apt to pick up garbagey, not disgusting, but things are off the street, because even if they're been run over by a car sometimes, or but... Yeah, like it's just not in this pristine state. Or like I said, that was maybe bought in a store last week.
Right. And you're in New York, right?
Yes, I am. But I really think anywhere these things turned up. I've picked up things in other cities and other places, and even sometimes more so, or, you know,
I love that.
Yeah.
I'd love to go for a walk with you and sure, see what we find.
Wear like gardening gloves or something.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I love it. You know what I was going to say about the organizing? Because my studio is saying, well, I'm not as organized as you, but I mean, I do have buckets of things, but they're not organized by any. I have two big buckets. One, things I really like, things I'm not quite sure I want to throw out yet. Mm-hmm. And what I do is, like, the small things tend to fall down to the bottom.
Yeah.
And the bigger things are on the top, right? And so sometimes what I do is I go into my studio, I lift up the big stuff, I close my eyes, and I reach down and I grab a handful of the little stuff and throw it on my table, and then I make a collage from that.
Yeah.
And when I'm feeling stuck or blocked or whatever, and sometimes they turn out great, sometimes they're terrible, but it's so fun, because it is that treasure box. I mean, it's a selective treasure box, because I've decided which treasures are going to be in there already, but it's kind of a fun little, like.
That makes so much sense to me. I really relate to what you're saying very much. That's right. Very often also I could be working on something, and I'll look over on my desk of the scraps that I've been cutting stuff out of, or just whatever trashy stuff is accumulating as I'm working. And it never fails. That pile is more interesting than what I'm working on. I won't say it never fails, but just so often I'm much more intrigued by the things that sort of landed there by chance. And often I'll put aside what I'm doing and say, let me work on that
thing. This pile of scraps. I love that.
Or several things at once. Or so I think when you're too overly organized, you eliminate that possibility of happening. So a slight bit of disorganization is maybe to your benefit.
There we go. That justifies every messy studio out there, everybody. So you don't have to. Okay, so I really want to talk about your beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Alice in Wonderland book.
Yeah.
Which I'm holding in front of me right here. It is so gorgeous. Okay. I want to know many things, and I'm sure everybody else will too, because I did a giveaway for this book a while when it first came out, and people went cuckoo for it. How long did it take you? Did you have a plan? Like, were there Excel spreadsheets involved so you could keep yourself organized? And I also just sort of want to know, like, did you ever get blocked? Because there is so much work in this book. And so I just want to know the whole story.
All right. Well, essentially, I was very extremely fortunate that the assignment came to me from a wonderful editor, Marianne Hull at Quarto Publishing. They have this series of classics. And so I can honestly say I would never dream up, hey, I should reillustrate Alice in Wonderland, because it hasn't been done enough times and no one's really done it right yet. You know, that would be insane, egotistical thing to think. So the only response was, sure, I'll do it.
And did you know her already? Or did she see your work and think you were right?
I believe that's the case. So, I'm forever in gratitude and debt for that, as an understatement.
Wow.
As well as Regina Grenier at the same publisher. But so honestly, the only thing you can say is yes. And I'm not a big worrier by nature, but I really did strike some fear into my heart and say, wow, Alice in Wonderland, how on earth can I do that? And I really was a little afraid, but I didn't have much time to dwell on that, because the schedule was such that I think I had 4 months to
do the
art, which I will say is slightly unreasonable, given that it's almost 200 pages with just about every page illustrated.
Yeah.
And the only reaction was to use that to my advantage and just keep going and start. And I realize now that was a big benefit to me, or a big advantage, that you didn't have time for the fear to stop you or to freeze you up. And
the work had to be loose and quick too, in a way.
That's right. So that plays to my strength. But I will say, other people have illustrated other books that have very different styles, and I have no idea how they manage that. But this is what I do, and I think it helped me to be loose and free, and it really played to my strengths.
Yeah.
And, so
how did you decide what Alice was going to look like, given that, you know, you're right, Alice has been illustrated and animated and come to life so many times? How did you decide? Because your Alice is great. And that was when I did the giveaway, so many of the comments were, I love her Alice.
Oh, that's nice.
And so how did you play around with her?
I would say that was maybe my very biggest worry, because I'm not a character-y driven illustrator by nature. And I don't particularly, my personal taste doesn't lean towards
people.
Cute and or caricature-y styles, even though some people do that great. I guess I like things that are a little quirky and maybe a little bit dark or unexpected.
Well, that fits with Alice.
That's
quirky
right.
and dark.
It really is true. If you read the actual test, it's not real childlike, and it does have a real surreal and almost existential quality about it, very honestly, where she's just a human being lost in a puzzling world. And I really think it does have a higher, even adult, philosophical slant to it.
Yeah.
So I gave her an almost, you know, blank and lost expression that I think is how I feel and a little of everybody feels in the face of, you know, how confusing the world is. Like I said, it's a kind of WTF expression.
Yes, totally.
And I think it's appropriate if you read the text. She's not a cute little girl overreacting to every little scene and character in the text. You know, that's a kind of Disney version, but the text is not like that, really.
No.
So I'm very glad because that was, you know, a very big consideration.
Mm-hmm. Would you do another book? Oh, you did do another book. But would you illustrate another kid's book?
I would really love to. I will say I was so fortunate with this experience that I realized that this was sort of not officially considered in children's category. It's considered for art and design lovers, but it's kid appropriate.
Right.
So I will say I didn't have a heavy-handed microscope of what I think is typical in children's publishing of that's not appropriate or that's too dark or that's
right.
scary. So
that's kind of nice.
It was very fortunate. So
yeah.
I think that once again, there may be very little money in it, but I think I would probably am best suited to things that are not the most traditional and cute. So, you know, I'm still trying to working out what that category is.
It's your own special category.
Maybe. I mean, I think it exists not to be, you know, denigrate the United States in any way, but I do think that international publishing sometimes seems a little more open to unusual views. If you ever look at international children's books, there it can be a lot more unexpected, and I really enjoy that personally.
Well, I'll keep my eye out if more projects. Let me know if more projects come. But
yeah.
But quickly, what's you mentioned that you have another when we were emailing before this that you have a book coming out in the fall.
Yes, and I'll just say quickly that. It came from, since we had such a nice time working on this, the same publisher and my lovely editor, Marianne, suggested, the publisher does a lot of how-to arts and crafts books, whether it's watercolor or paper cutting or drawing and doodling. That's kind of their niche.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, what if we do a book that's a sort of how-to visual guide to collage. And once again, the only rational answer is to say, yeah. And same thing. I went back and worried and thought, I don't know how to do collage. And I'm not being facetious. It really is true. I'm not a methodical step-by-step person. So I'll just say quickly that the book is, you know, geared to people that really crave the idea of playing and digging in to materials, whether cutting and pasting or all kinds of multimedia, and just having fun with it and not being afraid or having too many self-doubts, more than a really careful step by step, because that's not the way I approach it.
Right.
So,
it sounds fun.
I hope so. So there you go.
That's, is there a title for it?
It is called Once Upon a Piece of Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I did write it as well, but I will say, you know, I'm not Charles Dickens. It's not a novel. it's a lot of how-to exercises, like a little bit. Here's an example, and you do your version, along with just sort of my general philosophy, a lot what I've already spoken to you about not being slowed down by self-doubt and shutting off the voices in your head and destroy something in order to create something.
Oh man, Soul Sister, that sounds like exactly, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, well, I hope it's something good. We'll see.
I know. My book is coming out in the fall too, and it's the same thing. It's like once it's done, and now you're just sitting around waiting for it to come out is such a weird time.
Yeah. You get waves of thinking, this is the greatest thing in the world, to, does this make any sense at all?
Yeah, you know? And there's nothing you can do now. I know.
That's right.
I know. I keep hearing the word trust in my head, and I'm just rolling with that.
Yeah, I relate to a lot of what you're saying very much.
Okay, now the only thing left, speed round.
What's that?
I'm just going to ask you some really quick questions.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
But they always end up being longer answers, so no pressure.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
I'll try to be quick.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Okay, even hot and sweaty New York summers.
Let's say a more Mediterranean, idealized view, but
okay.
I think my background just sort of must naturally crave the sun. But the fact is I like all seasons, but if I had to pick one, there you
summer.
Go.
Okay, fair enough. Sweet or salty?
That's a good one. I'm going to say sweet, but I don't overly control myself, but I try not to let myself go off the deep end, because you can really get yourself into a coma and not feel very good.
That's true.
So that's enough to keep me from going off the deep end. Yeah.
This one's a little bit of a longer answer. Best summer job you ever had?
Oh boy. Working in the Sunrise Mall movie theater, I got to stand behind the popcorn stand. And again, as this was some decades ago, there was, you know, very little rules. It was okay to keep eating popcorn right out of the machine as it came out, and even take a junior mint or two out of the box.
Could you sneak your friends into the theater?
That was a little harder, but I myself got to go in and see multiple movies, and it was fun.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
My son is really big into Would You Rathers right now. He's 9. So this is the one he contributed for today. Would you rather live in a mansion in the country or a penthouse in the city?
Huh.
I thought I'd know your answer right away.
Well, I hesitated. My first gut reaction was the mansion in the country, to be honest, because maybe everyone wants the idyllic idea that they don't have. But I would have to put an asterisk that I could at least have a dog or other people with me, because there's something a little scary about a creaky house if you're really on your own. So, but... yeah, as much as I live in the city, I'm not like, xenophobic. Oh, the city is the greatest place, and everywhere else is, you know, just not worth the time. I don't feel that way at all. So I'm gonna go with the mansion in the country.
Okay, you can have a dog.
Okay,
and you can invite people to come, and it's a mansion. You're like, people can come live with you if you want.
Yeah, I'll say that's it for sure then.
Okay. Great. That's it.
Oh, great.
Easy.
All right.
Easy. Yeah. That was so good. I feel like it was like, me too, me too, me too,
yeah,
me too.
I felt that very much. So I'm glad it took all this time for us to talk, but I think we do have a similar background and you know, instincts that drive us to go beyond something more personal, and just the way we work is I really relate a ton to what
we should say. Go for a little garbage walk in New York and then we should go and lift up the big stuff and pick up the small stuff from the bottom collage party. How fun would that be?
I'm up for it too.
Yeah. I'm going to be in New York in the fall, so I will give you a call.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, certainly.
Well, thank you so much for this, and congratulations on the new book. I cannot wait to see it. And I'm going to do a great big post on my site that goes with this podcast so that I can show work and show everything that we sort of talked about.
Wow.
And if you have any photos of your semi-organized buckets of stuff, send them over and I'll put them in the post.
All right. Let me write that down. And all right. Well, this was, you know, a very unexpected surprise. I'm incredibly, sincerely flattered, because the people that you, you know, highlight on your site are really exceptional. And all the time I'm really in awe of that work. So it's still amazing to me that you would consider me in that category.
Oh my gosh.
I mean that very sincerely. I really do.
Come on.
This was, it's true. So I appreciate that. And I was just going to say, I hope I didn't ramble on too long, because
no.
It is true. I'm a pretty, I think, introverted person, but when I get on topics that are just natural to me, I feel like maybe I go on a little too much. So
no,
I
loved every single minute, and it was so interesting to hear your story. So thank you for telling us.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Okay. I will talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you very soon.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Oh, that was so good. Yet another woman after my own heart. But the second I hung up, I realized I forgot to ask my tried and true question that I ask all collage artists. Yes, I forgot to say, what kind of glue do you use? So I emailed her. Turns out she's another Yoohoo stick lover. She also said that she uses her artist's acrylic medium, any art store brand will do, and she uses kids' paintbrushes, like the 10 for a few dollars set, so that they can be thrown out after several uses. So there you go. I feel better knowing. Oh, and P.S., I used a glue stick at a collage workshop that I taught last week, and I was covered in glue in about 10 seconds. So I bow down to those of you who have figured it out. Okay, enough about glue. Thanks to Andrea for doing this. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode and for giving away those two VIP tickets. Don't forget to enter on my site. And of course, huge, huge thanks to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.